You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Kendall Keene, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones with Andrew Joseph and Scotty Bordelon.
Arkansas has lost three in a row after a 40-17 loss to Mississippi State last Saturday at Starkville, Mississippi. The Razorbacks have one more game before this grueling seven-week stretch to begin the season ends. They will go to BYU on Saturday night to play the Cougars, who were 16th in the AP poll last week, but they fell out following a loss to Notre Dame. Matt Jones with Scotty Bordelon and Andrew Joseph of WholeHogSports.com. And during this three-game losing streak, I think that the Mississippi State game might have surprised me the most, just from the standpoint that I thought Arkansas, even without KJ Jefferson, would have been a little bit more competitive final score-wise. And, you know, you look at the game, and I don't know that the game was quite as lopsided as the score would indicate. Arkansas got into the red zone a couple of times, decided to go for it on fourth down because I guess they felt like they, you know, needed as many points as they could get and that field goals weren't going to beat Mississippi State. And that was probably true. But I expected them to lose big to Alabama. I thought they might lose to Texas A&M in a close game. Probably the final score of the Mississippi State, Scotty, was the most surprising of that stretch.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, that I thought it really stuck with me throughout the game week when last Monday Sam Pittman was previewing Mississippi State and he said one thing that's a little bit different about them than in years past, talking about their offense, is that they're, you know, they're more than comfortable just handing the ball off to their running backs. I mean, Dylan Johnson and Jaquavius Marks have had pretty good years. I mean, obviously with an offense like that, they're not going to be anywhere close to you know, being among the top leaders in rushing in the conference, but they're guys that you can hand the ball off to. And I think because sometimes I think it can catch defenses by surprise when they hand the ball off. I mean, those are guys that, you know, average north of, you know, 4 or 5 yards a carry whenever they get an opportunity. And I think that really came to fruition on Saturday. And I think Arkansas was just really on its heels early on when I think State's first three plays were all runs. I think they picked up like 21 or 22 yards. And then at that point, Arkansas was like wondering when the pass is coming and they're still running the ball. And they just found a lot of success that way. And it was just a game that I thought Arkansas didn't really have a great chance going in just without KJ. And then, you know, Cade Fortin starts the game, doesn't have great success. You know, they can't punch it in the red zone when they get there. And it was just kind of a perfect storm of things for Arkansas that were going against it. And I'm with you. I think it was the most surprising outcome of the year for Arkansas, just because I thought, you know, from a defensive game plan standpoint, you know, I thought that, you know, going in, that they were going to have a pretty good plan, or at least go to what they had done in previous years, is try to keep as much as possible in front of them in terms of the secondary. But then, you know, run like Mississippi State's run success, I think, just really changed the entire game. I thought it put Arkansas on its heels early, and they ended up running for 173 yards, which was 20 plus yards more than what they had, what their previous high was under Mike Leach. So it was just, yeah, all around the pretty rough day. And then you look at the stats and Bumper Pool and Drew Sanders have 30 tackles. And, you know, anytime normally you see those two guys have, you know, double digit tackles apiece, you know, you're thinking that Arkansas is probably in pretty good shape, but that's not necessarily the case when you're playing Mississippi State.
One of the things you got to talk about with Arkansas in that game is that there were injuries, more injuries in the secondary. That didn't take Miles Slusher on the trip. He's out with a calf injury. Sam Pittman said earlier this week that his status for the BYU game is up in the air. And then they lost two more safeties during the game. Kari Johnson goes out in the second quarter after he was having a pretty good game, at least tackle-wise. He had 9 tackles in less than a half of football. And then Jaden Johnson starting safety goes out with an injury during the first quarter of that game. And if there's one place that this team just can't afford injuries, especially against a team that can sling it all over the field like Mississippi State, it's in the secondary. Catalan's out for the year already. Bishop's out for the year already. And I think we're getting to the point with the secondary that we have to maybe kind of reset our level of expectations for this team. I don't know from a win-loss perspective yet, because I think there are some teams over the back half of the schedule that have got a lot of flaws too, that Arkansas could potentially beat, you know, just from the perspective of how they're going to have to win their games. I think if Arkansas is going to beat teams the rest of the year, a lot of times it's probably going to be one of these deals. I call it Big 12 ball, where you just have to, you know, outshoot them, so to speak. I mean, you know, we thought going into Mississippi State that Arkansas is probably going to have to score 40 or more points to win the game. That proved to be true. And it might be that way with a lot of teams the rest of the schedule, beginning this week, Scotty, with BYU.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I think expectations for performance in the secondary probably should have been reassessed after Jalen Catalan went down. I mean, that's a guy that can completely change the complexion of a defense when he's out there. I mean, he's not only a guy that's going to, you know, be toward the top of your tackle leaders, but he can, you know, he can play the ball hawk role at times too, come up with PBUs and interceptions and that kind of thing. He's had multiple pick games in the past. I think last season opener against Rice, I believe he had two. And so he kind of gives you a little bit of that. And now you're completely without that, plus his leadership. And I think one of the bigger injuries post-Catalan is not necessarily Ladarius Bishop, because I think you have an understanding of maybe who your top corners are. But Miles Slusher is just such a big deal too, because he's got, you know, SEC game experience in the past, and you saw what kind of an impact he can make in that Texas A&M game. You know, the Aggies didn't, obviously they're a little bit limited offensively with their quarterback situation, and they didn't throw it all over the yard, but you know, he was Arkansas's highest graded player defensively against Texas A&M, and was making tackles for loss and coming up with big third down stops. That's the kind of stuff that it's really, really hard to replace experience. And when you don't have Miles Slusher out there, it definitely makes a difference. Yeah, I think what the secondary issues bring up too is, especially when you're looking at the rest of the schedule, you're kind of wondering, okay, when is Arkansas going to face a team that's not going to be able to test that secondary? And in the SEC, like even Liberty too, with, you know, Hugh Freeze as their coach, like they're going to test Arkansas secondary too. So it's like week after week, you're kind of expecting Arkansas to have some breakdowns in a game. And at that point, it just kind of becomes, can Arkansas outscore its opponents? And right now they're having so much, you know, so many troubles with third down and punching into the end zone and red zone situations and that kind of thing. And I think there's some question marks, at least for me anyway, with perimeter playmakers, like outside of Jaden Hazelwood. Like, I'm not sure that Arkansas's got a go-to receiver. Like, I think their second leading receiver right now is Matt Landers, and he's got three catches for 50 yards in the last three games total. And then your number three receiver is Rocket, and number four is Trey Knox. And Trey Knox has got 12 catches, I think, through 6 weeks, and half of those catches came in the season opener. So there's lots of questions for me just on both sides of the ball. And the offense is just going to have to figure out, you know, how to get their passing game going a little bit. Maybe some quick screens and quick stuff toward the sidelines could help with that. But I've been a little bit surprised with the lack of the deep ball, especially when KJ's playing. I think they've got to get that going a little bit more. Trey Knox, I think, has got to be a little bit more involved in the offense and give, you know, KJ kind of a safety valve in the flats and that kind of thing. And they've got to be able to turn around and hand the ball off too. I think I was kind of surprised that, you know, maybe Arkansas didn't have more success running the ball against Mississippi State, you know, outside of, you know, maybe that 50 plus yard run that Malik Hornsby had.
Yeah, I know the Razorbacks have kind of taken some flack for the way they played their defensive scheme against Mississippi State and continuing to drop it eight and rush three. But that gave them their best chance to win, right? Like, Arkansas doesn't have the personnel at the moment to play man coverage against an SEC offense. They tried it against Missouri State, and they got torched whenever the pass rush didn't get home. And especially with all the injuries that you guys have mentioned, they just don't have the horses to play mano a mano, man on man against these SEC caliber offenses. They dropped what, four potential interceptions? I mean, they were getting their hands on the ball. That could have maybe affected the outcome a little bit if they were able to come down with those. But I think the drop eight did give them their best chance to win. Obviously, it didn't work. But I mean, it was their best chance at masking the injuries and the talent deficiencies that they have. And as far as the perimeter playmakers that you mentioned and Landers, and I think you said he had three catches for 50 yards over the last 3 weeks or so. And it's not like he's maximizing the opportunities he's getting. Like, he's not getting three catches on three targets. He's got 14 targets and he's only caught three of them. And he got blanked against Mississippi State and then had, I think, two catches against Alabama when Warren Thompson wasn't even playing. So that's just something that's probably not acceptable for a starting caliber receiver, I would think.
My question with and I totally get that people were frustrated with the coverage that Arkansas was fielding. I just think that, you know, against Mississippi State, like Andrew said, like your best bet is to drop eight and get as many, you know, defensive players in coverage as possible, you know, to cover all of the receivers that Mississippi State has. I mean, I talked about it a lot last week. Like, they had five or six guys that were right around the 20 catch mark. So their balance at receiver is really good. So you got to account for all of those guys. But like, if you're say that Arkansas would have blitzed Drew Sanders a little bit more, that's still four pass rushers against five linemen, potentially a running back. Like, Mississippi State's still got numbers on you. So are you saying that you want to rush five or six guys and just leave more of the field potentially uncovered in a secondary? Like, you're at that point, you're basically saying you want to rush five or six guys and leave however many are left in the secondary to cover all of that ground against receivers that are, you know, you know, had really good statistical seasons. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I you know, just keep going back to, I think the rush three was fine. I just don't think that Arkansas's urgency was quite there, especially, you know, in the run game, especially because they were expecting the pass. But you know, I think that Mississippi State's just a game where you've got to go into it expecting to give up yardage, and you've got to kind of bank on the fact that you know, Will Rogers is going to put a ball in jeopardy at some point, and when that does happen, you've got to be opportunistic and come away with those takeaways.
And I thought that was the big difference between this year's game and the last 2 years when they played Mississippi State, is that they gave up yardage to Mississippi State the previous 2 years. But two things that stand out to me: they got interceptions the previous 2 years. Greg Brooks had the pick six early in that game in 20 that turned it around. Grant Morgan had a big interception last year. Arkansas had chances to intercept passes last Saturday, just dropped them. I mean, there were probably four or five chances where the Razorbacks got their hand on the ball. And the other thing that I think dropping the eight does is that it requires you to be a really sure tackling team. And I think of Pittman's three teams as he's had at Arkansas, I think this is probably the worst tackling team that he's had. There were a lot of missed tackles against Mississippi State last weekend that led to, you know, big explosive type plays. And, you know, when you're not a sure tackling team, I don't think it really matters if you're dropping three, if you're rushing five. It doesn't matter what you're doing. If you're not a sure tackling team, you're going to have some problems. And that's one of the big problems with this team right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you look at the Pro Football Focus numbers, Arkansas had its best tackling day of the season against Mississippi State. It's just
But
the
they've had
fact.
some bad ones, right?
Yeah, no doubt that they have. And Missouri State and South Carolina, Texas A&M, that's, you know, one, two, three in terms of bad days. I mean, Arkansas's second best tackling grade was against Alabama. But I think the frustrating thing is, and I totally understand it as fans, that, like, you know, Bumper and Drew might have come up with 30 tackles, but what was the average yardage depth on those tackles? And I mean, I'm sure it was probably in the, you know, somewhere in the 7 to 11 yard range. Like, that's not exactly where you want to be making tackles if you're going to be making them. Like, one of the things that I found out after the game, which I thought was absolutely stunning, was Arkansas had 105 tackles in the game, or that's what they were credited with in stat broadcast, and not a single one of them went for lost yardage. That was the first time in 6 years that Arkansas had not recorded a single tackle for loss in a game. And the last time that happened was Auburn in 2016, in that 53-point loss. That was pretty mind-blowing to me.
And there's so much focus on the three down linemen. I think people forget what Arkansas has been doing with Drew Sanders a lot this year, which is basically bringing him as a rush end, but in a stand-up position. We just didn't see that very much on Saturday, Scotty.
No, we really didn't at all. And we, you know, going into the game, thought that he could be a potential X factor. I think maybe Tom mentioned that on the podcast previewing the game last Friday. Didn't see a whole lot of that from Drew. But at the same time, like, you got to think about, you know, Arkansas's secondary is obviously struggling, and they're going to employ, you know, five wide receivers most of the time, and then they'll have a running back lined up next to Will Rogers, and he's going to be running in the flat or running a kind of a V cut into the middle of the field. So you've got to account for all of those guys. And you want to have, I mean, you want to play the numbers, right? Like, if Arkansas is dropping eight against six potential pass catchers, like, you feel like you've got the numbers there. But by and large, I mean, outside of those turnover worthy throws, I think Will Rogers pretty much, he kind of picked Arkansas apart. I think in the last two games that he's played against Arkansas, he's thrown seven touchdowns, one interception, and, you know, averaged over 400 yards. So he's, you know, he's been pretty good at finding like those soft spots in the zone, and turning like those 7 yard completions. You know, when Arkansas is not sure tackling, you know, those 7 yard completions can turn into 15 yards, 20 yards, that kind of thing. And that just, you know, that's the kind of thing that makes people who really follow this program closely, it just drives them absolutely crazy.
Arkansas, as we said, 3-3, they've lost three in a row. They'll play BYU on Saturday afternoon in Provo. That game's going to be on ESPN with a 2:30 kickoff Central Time. That's 1:30 in Utah. As you look at some of the reasons for Arkansas' struggles here over the last few weeks, you know, I wrote these down the other day, basically stats of concern for the Razorbacks, where we're midway through the season. You know, they're either at or near the bottom of the SEC. They're very low nationally in some of these stats, and some of these are going to have to be improved over the back half of the season, you know, for them to be a bowl game or a bowl eligible team at minimum. And then we'll see, you know, where they might go from there. You look at some of these stats, guys. Scoring defense, giving up 32.2 points per game, 13th in the SEC, 108th nationally. Pass defense, 307 yards a game, 13th in the SEC, 127th nationally out of 131 teams. Total defense, almost 455 yards a game, 13th in the SEC, 124th nationally. Opponents on third downs are converting at nearly a 44% clip against them. Again, 13th in the SEC, 104th. Opponent fourth downs, this is where Mississippi State really burned them the other day. Their opponents are converting two out of every three fourth down attempts against Arkansas. Mississippi State did it three of five times. Red zone offense, we talked about this one. Arkansas only scoring 73% of the time they get into the offense. That's worst in the SEC, 116th nationally. Turnover margin, it was so good the first couple of games, and it's been really bad the last four games. It's 10th in the SEC. Punting, averaging 39 yards a punt. That was also an issue on Saturday against Mississippi State. That's last in the SEC. What are some of the areas you think that Arkansas can improve on in those stats of concern to where they're going to win these games more? I guess, you know, maybe a couple that stand out to me is punting. We saw Reed Bauer come in and replace Max Fletcher during the Mississippi State game. Seemed like punting improved after that change was made. I think red zone offense obviously can improve because, you know, maybe you're starting to see Arkansas press a little bit right now, trying to score touchdowns in the red zone as opposed to settling for field goals. It's not what you want to do, but at least put points on the board. It would have been a lot better against Mississippi State on Saturday if you had six more points as opposed to no points like they came away with in the red zone. Scotty, Andrew, what are the areas you think that they can improve in out of those concerning categories right now?
To me, I think an area where they can improve that encapsulates would help out their red zone offense, their third down percent conversion percentage, is just those drives where they get down to third and one and fourth and one, and they just need a yard. And for a team that prides themselves on being able to push people around and move them off the line of scrimmage, I don't think the last three games in this losing streak that they've been able to do that. They went 0-for-3 on fourth down against Mississippi State. They got stuffed multiple times in the backfield, and they had seven runs that got either stuffed in the backfield or just made it back to the line of scrimmage, which was 16% of their plays, and then Mississippi State only had one of those. And so I think for Sam Pittman, I think that is kind of an area of importance for his team. Being a former offensive line coach, he wants to be physical, wants to play bully ball, and they just haven't been able to do that recently.
Yeah, I asked Sam Pittman about the red zone offense on Monday. I just think it's a big concern, and it goes back, you know, even to the Missouri State game. Like, Arkansas in the last 4 weeks does not have as many red zone touchdowns as it did in the first two games of the season. Like, they had 8 against Cincinnati and South Carolina on 10 chances, and in the last 4 weeks they have 7 touchdowns on more. I think it's somewhere around 16 chances, if I'm reading the numbers right. I can't do quick math very well, but that's an area that's got to really improve. And I think against, like, a team against Missouri State, you know, you kind of push maybe those red zone issues to the side, because, you know, Rockets, you know, very seldom are going to put the ball on the ground, especially right at the goal line. And then there's, you know, the next week, you know, KJ fumbles at the, you know, inside the 5. There's a bad snap at the 15-yard line that, you know, complicates things on a, you know, a potential game-winning field goal. It's just like, it seems to me like Arkansas is really overthinking things in the red zone. And something else that I thought was really concerning, you can go to CFB stats and break down Arkansas's rushing offense by, you know, look at some situational stats. In the red zone, Arkansas has run the ball 49 times for an average of 2.9 yards per carry. That's, you know, I understand that some of those red zone carries are like 1 yard touchdown runs that, you know, Arkansas had several of. I think it was in the South Carolina game, lots of, you know, short yardage touchdown runs. But still, that's a lot of carries inside your red zone. And you're not getting, it doesn't seem like, a great deal of push from your front, that your veteran front. Like, you got four guys back, four guys that played, you know, a lot of football alongside each other. And then Luke Jones, the guy in the preseason, they said didn't stand out for the wrong reasons. And I think I've been a little bit disappointed with that. And just, it just kind of seems like Arkansas's offense, for the lack of a better word, just gets a little bit constipated when the field condenses. And, you know, they like to be high powered and high flying and, you know, throw the ball all over the place, run the ball, and just kind of impose their will a little bit there. How does, I mean, your offensive identity doesn't change once you get into the red zone. Like, you should still probably run some of the same type of things that you do, you know, the other 80 yards of the field. It's just, I think the red zone issues are a real concern. They haven't, you know, they don't have a touchdown percentage rate up north of 50% in the red zone since week 2. And I think that's a huge concern.
What's so interesting about this offense is that in total offense, the numbers are really good. They had 483 yards against Mississippi State, but the scoring doesn't seem like it really matches up with, you know, the total offense of numbers that they have. And, you know, I mean, that's what we're seeing right now with some of these red zone struggles. And it just feels to me like a lot of times when they're in the red zone, they become really predictable. I thought that on the goal line runs, with especially like the fourth down with Rashad DeBinion, I was screaming for my TV, this is going to be a run right up the middle. And that's what it was. It just feels like we see them really predictable in some of these play calling situations.
Yeah, I think so too. And I've got a stat for you. This is from Corey Stewart. He goes by Stu Hogg on Twitter. Arkansas is 24th in the FBS in yards per game, and they're 73rd in the FBS in points per game. So that he says the differential in 49 spots is the single largest among all 131 FBS teams. That's not exactly what you're at all what you're looking for. And it's kind of hard to pinpoint what the issue is there. I think Arkansas's offense is a little bit too predictable. And I've talked about this before. Like, I sit in between you guys, you know, most home games, and it seems like Arkansas is, you know, whether they have success or not on first down, you know, say they throw an incomplete pass, they come back their next play, what do you think it's going to be? It's probably going to be a handoff up the middle. And then you say they get 1 or 2 yards, and then they're, it just seems like they're getting into third and long way too often. And wait, like, the thing that really jars me is how quickly they get into third and long. And then that leads to, you know, those, you know, 3-play, 6-yard drives that last a minute and 31 seconds. And it puts your, you know, your really struggling defense and your secondary on the field for, a lot longer than you probably would like them to be. I just think that I wish I had the time to sit down and do like a first down and second down analysis on just like what Arkansas's success rate is on those downs by play type. But I would assume that, a lot of it comes down to, are you having success on first down? Because if you do, I think you've got most of your playbook available to you. But if you don't have success on first down, I think they're just basically going to turn to what they think, can bring them. They can go back to what they think their bread and butter is, which is the inside zone read game. And teams are, I think, kind of picking up on that. And it's leading to, some pretty tough third down plays, where you've got to go get most of the 10 yards to move the chains. And I just, right now, this offense is just, I don't know. It's been less and less enjoyable to watch, I think, since the opening weeks of the season.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Whole Hog Football Podcast is sponsored by Kendall King Design, Display, Signage, KendallKing.com. That's KendallKing.com.
The Kendall King Group family of companies plays to win, just like our hogs. We know how demanding retail marketing is today. From digital omnichannel creative services through in-store signing and displays, and finally to social influence, we've got you covered. Our KKG Inc. family of companies, Kendall King, Shopcart Creative, and Soapbox Influence are winning with multiple retailers and brands. We play to win and we'll be a winning partner for all your retail marketing service needs. Go Hogs!
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Football Podcast.
On Wednesday, Hunter Juracek will be our featured guest at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club luncheon. You can come listen to him at Hilton Garden Inn off of Weddington Drive. The program begins at noon. We'll start serving lunch at 11:45. For more information, nwadealpiggy.com. Malik Hornsby was a really interesting case, and it's interesting we've gotten so far into this podcast and we really haven't talked just a whole lot about him. On Saturday, he almost seems to me like he's one of those players who he's a gamer. I mean, he may not be great, what you want him to be, consistent in practice, but when he gets on the field, he can make a lot of plays for you. And I know the numbers didn't, turn out just perfect for him. I think he finished 8 of 17, was intercepted a couple of times, but he got off to a great start and really put a jolt into the offense. He completed 7 of his first 10 passes, obviously had the long run early in that game, had the long touchdown pass to Bryce Stevens. They say that they're not going to play him at receiver anymore. He's going to be a quarterback full-time moving forward. He's going to be their number two quarterback behind KJ Jefferson. And I thought it was a little bit of an eye-opener to see how Hornsby played on Saturday.
Yeah, I just can't really imagine what role he's going to have for the Razorbacks, like what impact he's going to be able to make as the number two quarterback. Because I mean, obviously if KJ's healthy, he's going to play and they're not going to rotate quarterbacks and KJ's going to get those snaps. And I don't think Malik wants to sit another year behind KJ, who's not looking like a highly touted NFL draft prospect at the moment. So assuming he returns, Hornsby would again be the number two guy. And I think after what he showed that he's capable of in this Mississippi State game with, I think, over 300 yards of total offense. And he showed that he can be a dynamic player. It's a bit challenging. You can understand why Arkansas would want to go with KJ, but it does feel like they are maybe wasting a little bit of Malik's athleticism and talent with him on the bench. And I think coming into this game, Cade Fortin got the start, and that raised some eyebrows. And I think that was because Sam Pittman expected to be able to hand the ball off, run the play ball possession football, and just have Cade Fortin be essentially what Cooper Rush is doing for the Dallas Cowboys, not turn the ball over and be able to hand the ball off and go win the game with your running backs. Obviously, it didn't work out like that, and Malik got his chance, and I thought he did well. He did struggle late. I think he missed six of his last seven passes, including the two interceptions, so it tailed off after that hot start, but he definitely showed a glimpse of dynamic potential.
Cooper Rush has got the NFL's best defense, by the way. That's not what Cade Fortin's working with, Scott.
That is a fact. I think Malik was kind of what I expected him to be when he came into the game. And then his final stats, you know, kind of bear out pretty much exactly what I thought of him, especially like as a passer. He's going to be one of those guys that I think in practice, you know, one of the reasons that Sam said that they started Cade was because, you know, he, you know, protected the football in practice. Malik is one of those guys who's a little bit more geared toward maybe taking some risks. And in practice, that's, you know, you're trying to figure out who your starter is. If the guy that's competing for the job is turning the ball over, you might not go toward him. But in a game, like he just kind of, like he's got such a live arm that it didn't surprise me at all that, you know, Arkansas was able to, you know, pick up some chunk plays in the passing game. And the pass that he threw to Bryce Stevens for the touchdown, we overuse the word dime a lot when you're talking about quarterbacks or point guards, basketball players, whoever make a nice pass. But that was a dime. Like he put that ball in a position 55 plus yards downfield that, you know, only his receiver could get to. That was a beautiful pass from him. Great catch by Bryce Stevens too. I mean, I made the joke yesterday with a couple guys before Sam's press conference that, you know, when Malik, given that, you know, his arm is so live and rocket-like sometimes, that I kind of expected Bryce Stevens to catch that ball and the momentum of the pass carry him out of the back of the end zone where he lands out of bounds for no catch. But that was a great job of body control by him to catch that. And then, you know, when Malik took off running on that first carry that he had, I think the 52-yarder, like that, you can just see that his speed is so different than anything else that Arkansas has got right now running the football. Maybe the only thing that might compare is if you ever see Matt Landers in the open field. At this rate, I'm just not sure that's going to happen. But Malik, you know, his final stats, they didn't surprise me at all. You know, the 8 of 17 is kind of what I expected. He's, you know, he struggles because his arm, like I've said several times already, is so live that I think he has to work a little bit on touch throws, like especially the one to Matt Landers near the goal line. The ball is just wholly inaccurate, not giving his guys a chance to catch the ball. And then there was another one I think that Stat Broadcast gave Trey Knox the target for, but I think he was like 10 or 15 yards downfield and Malik overthrew him by 10 or 15 yards. And those are just the kind of throws that the Malik's got to learn to make if he wants to, you know, get a quarterback job and earn it, or not earn it, but keep it and continue to grow as a quarterback. But, you know, I think Sam said that Malik felt that he validated himself a little bit. He led an offense that I'm not sure what the average yards per play number was when Malik was in the game, but it was sure a hell of a lot higher than what Cade Fortin's was. And so there's obviously some explosive play potential there with Malik. And I honestly, if gun to my head, if we say in the last of Malik in like a running back or receiver's role, I'm probably going to say no. He's just too dynamic of an athlete.
Yeah, but I think probably we see the reason why he didn't start with that throw to Matt Landers and some of those throws late in the game.
Sure.
It's just an inconsistency with him when he's throwing the ball.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's kind of been the thing. Like as soon as Malik threw that touchdown pass to Bryce Stevens or, you know, hit Keytron Jackson for that 21-yard gain, the only thing I saw on my Twitter feed was I thought everybody was telling me that Malik couldn't throw. He started 7 of 10, but it was like that he kind of tailed off at the end, and then he ends up, you know, a little bit below the 50% mark, which is, I think that's kind of where he is as a passer right now.
One of the other things that happened against Mississippi State is Bumper Poole set the career tackles record for the Razorback. He had 14 against Mississippi State. He gave him 409 for his career. He's going to set a record that I think is going to be really hard to touch because he's getting to play 5 years due to his COVID season. But I do want to say a couple of things about him. Number one, he's clearly playing through some injuries right now. You see him walk into the media interview rooms, and there's a significant, you know, kind of a limp going on with him. He said after the game the other day that he's dealing with a hip injury. You know, so I think that for him to be playing at the level that he's playing with the injuries that he's probably going through, I think is notable. He's not making every tackle, but I don't know that any of us would either, you know, going through probably what he's going through, and he's still playing at a really high level. To have 14 tackles in any game, I think is an accomplishment. And for anybody who tries to downplay this career record, one thing to keep in mind, he has played 50 games. That's 409 tackles. I believe Tony Bua had 408 in 52 games. And so it really shows you the type of per game contribution that Bumper Poole has given this team for the last 5 years.
Yeah, I know there's, you know, Arkansas posted the graphic of Bumper, you know, whenever he set the school tackles record. And, you know, he was kind of catching a lot of heat just because I think that's kind of where the fan base is right now. Just not. They're not into that kind of thing right now, and they just kind of think that more or less he's kind of a compiler, if that makes sense. He's making tackles because he's got to be out there, and the defense is so bad, somebody's got to make a tackle. But I think, you know, a lot of people are kind of discrediting that record a little bit because he's played 5 years before, or he's played 5 years now. But I'll say one thing, like snaps played and games played does not necessarily equate to production. And Bumper has, I think, like few guys that we've seen in the past, he's kind of taken advantage of pretty much every snap and every game that he's been available to play in.
Something about that wows me about him owning that record is just the fact that he hasn't been a starter for the majority of his career, and he's been that third linebacker in the rotation. Just even last year, his senior year, he was behind Hayden Henry and Grant Morgan. And then this year he's coming into his own as being the starter in his fifth year, as you guys mentioned, and now he's the all-time leading tackler. And I think that's crazy and can play pretty well with linebacker recruits, I would say.
Arkansas plays BYU this weekend in Provo, as we mentioned earlier. This is a really hard game, I feel like, to get a feel for how I feel like it's going to go. I think Arkansas is going to play a lot better now that it has KJ Jefferson back in the fold. If Miles Slusher can play on Saturday, I think that changes some things defensively for this team. I don't think we're going to see the drop eight rush three against BYU. I think, you know, there's not as much, that's not to say BYU can't throw the ball, but I don't think there's as much worry that BYU is going to burn you over the top as there was with Will Rogers or with Bryce Young the week before. So I think it's going to be a different game plan for Arkansas against BYU defensively, and certainly having Jefferson back in the fold offensively makes you feel better about, you know, the potential for putting more points on the board. BYU, they're a tough team to beat at home. They've beaten a lot of Power 5 teams at Lavelle Edwards Stadium over the last few years. In fact, I think I looked it up, since 2019, they've beaten seven different Power 5 teams at home. Southern Cal was one of those teams, albeit during kind of a down year for USC. They beat Baylor there earlier this year when Baylor was ranked inside the top 10, beat them in double overtime in a game that probably shouldn't have gone to overtime to begin with. BYU missed a field goal late in that game that sent it to overtime. I don't know how to get a feel for this game, though. It feels like a real toss-up. On one hand, I feel like BYU is tough to beat at home. You do have the elevation that I think is probably overblown a little bit, but it's certainly something that I think you keep in mind playing in that higher altitude in Utah. And then on the other hand, I feel like Arkansas, with its SEC athletes, ought to be able to go in to BYU, and even though they're a little bit down right now, still be the better lineup, the better roster.
Yeah, I think it comes down to probably two things. It's like whether Arkansas's secondary can limit, you know, Jaron Hall in the pass game. You know, if he's available to go this weekend, I think that's going to be really big. Arkansas's just got to eliminate explosive plays. Like, that's just kind of killing them right now. got to get, I think they did a fairly decent job keeping things in front last week, but it's just, I don't know. Teams are just having, you know, too easy of a time right now. I think just exploiting, you know, different mismatches in the secondary and, you know, pinpointing guys that they think that they can have success on, success against. And I think on the flip side, I think it comes down to Arkansas's run game. Like BYU, I think in three of its six games this year has given up 200 yards rushing to its opponent, including Utah State. So I think if Arkansas can, you know, near that number and then breathe some kind of a life into its passing game and get some of those playmakers involved. Like Arkansas's got playmakers on the perimeter. They're just, I don't know what it is. It just seems like that, like the passing game is just kind of stopped up right now. And maybe KJ, maybe we're expecting KJ, like we've talked about in the past, you know, maybe we're putting a little bit too much on him, you know, the week after coming back from an injury, expecting him to play like he was, or even, you know, maybe even a step better than he was before the injury. I think that's a lot to ask, but it wouldn't surprise me if KJ did that. I just think that he's that kind of guy. And I think he kind of senses the urgency that Arkansas kind of needs a spark just as an entire team. And I think that, you know, it really starts like with the attitude, the demeanor, mindset, toughness, all the football guy terms that you can think of. It really does start with the quarterback.
We'll talk plenty more about Arkansas and BYU later this week with Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. That podcast will publish Friday. Hope you'll join us at wholehogsports.com throughout the week for more of our coverage of Arkansas and BYU. And until Friday, for Scotty Bordelon and Andrew Joseph, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us.
The proceeding has been a production of wholehogsports.com. Look for our latest podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at wholehogsports.com for the latest news and commentary.